Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sara Gone Rogue, your politics program, and you'll be surprised to discover what is considered politics. I didn't think we would start with good news, but you've just heard it. Navi Pillay and her two merry men have resigned from their commission, their permanent commission into trying to find everything wrong with Israel all the time. For, I think, one reason given was her age and her health. But hopefully this actually means there is some recognition that the UN has got to, there has got to be some fundamental change, otherwise parts of it, and that is anything pretty much to do with human rights that involves Israel, is not only anachronistic, but it completely goes against the reasons why the UN was formed in the first place. And I personally take the view that that other than the services element of the UN, like a lot of organizations and entities, they reach a size and they become made up of a group of entities that don't serve the purpose of the world we're living in. So hell, what can I say? It's actually very good news. I think she has been a blot on South Africa's reputation, there we go. Anyway, just to say that what we'll be doing for the rest of the program is we will be looking more deeply into Cyril Ramaphosa's announcement on Sunday and the implications for it. And then I'll be interviewing an attorney from the Johannesburg Attorneys Association about the dire state of the court, of the master's office in Johannesburg, and we'll go into why that has implications for most people. And it will support a lot of my views on the fact that most civil servants deserve to be treated much better than they are, and that would have a knock-on effect. And then I'll look at what the dastardly Johannesburg City Council has planned for some of our parks, and looking at some action that can be taken in order to stop a very unreliable, a very unreliable entity. I don't know about you, but I've seen around Joburg suddenly a flurry, and I do mean a flurry, of repairing of potholes and even parts of streets that need resurfacing, etc., etc. Now, I'm not prepared to feel gratitude, because this not only should have been done a long time ago, but it's the very least one expects a city council to do. I have very little doubt, cynical that I am, that such work is being done in advance of the big G20 summit later this year in November. And we've just had the, I think it's economics and finance gathering, under G20 gathering, and they really, Trump's administration sent a low-level representative, if it came at all. I sort of haven't kept track of it. So I suspect the pressure is being put up. The question I want to know is, where is the money coming from? Because Joburg is essentially bankrupt. And it's the sort of thing where, the other than the sheer cynicism of seeing it happen, and oh, I'm pleased that it's happening, it makes everybody's lives easier, but I'm certainly not grateful for it in the sense of having gratitude for the work that that Joburg is doing. But I want to know where the money is coming from, and is it that they got together at a council meeting and said, you know, guys, I think we've got the G20 coming up, we're under pressure, national government's unhappy with us, stop the looting for a while and we'll be able to do some stuff. Is that a way too cynical? Because, I don't know, you know, they're suddenly doing work that we knew they were supposed to be doing. Well, who'd have thunk?
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I know that a fair amount has been spoken about the allegations laid by Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, the KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Commissioner of the Police, against the Minister of Police, Senzo Ndumu. Now, we had and commented on Howard's show yesterday. We had the President coming on for one of his occasional addresses to say what he would do. And, of course, everyone hoped that it would be perhaps a seminal moment, which on the surface of it, it wasn't. It was he announced what he wanted to announce. The other things that many of us thought he might consider, like the other couple of, at least couple of ministers who are guilty of, or alleged to be guilty of, criminal activity or misleading parliament or fraud, etc., that maybe this would presage a proper, a reshuffle of the cabinet. But no, in Cyril's style, he dealt entirely with the issue at hand, and that was the police minister. Now, of course, what was annoying about the whole presentation, other than being half an hour late, was that it was the sort of announcement that, serious as the issue is, and we'll look at that, serious as the issue is, it could have been done through a press release. It could have been, he could have announced it on radio, etc. He did not have to have the sort of ta-da-da-da-da-dum. We're having a meeting. We're having a family, what they call derisively, a family meeting. Because all he did was say that we're setting up a commission of inquiry to look into this, which was vintage Cyril. I mean, vintage Cyril. Now, that's not to say there shouldn't be an inquiry into any of this stuff. But as soon as it's a commission of inquiry in which what is put forward are report backs on an interim basis in 3 months, 6 months, and no date for the final report, which will go to the Speaker of the House and to the Chief Justice. And where exactly that's going to leave the people of South Africa, and whether we're going to have to fight to see that result, I'm not entirely sure. And, of course, there's a very bad history to commissions of inquiry. The Zondo Commission of Inquiry, which ultimately, at great cost and over great time, however, made some profound findings, and not least of which was the fact that that BEE, employment equity legislation, is unconstitutional, with specific reference to the way it is applied in the procurement of goods and services by government. But nothing has really been done, and the entities and organizations that are meant to do something about it, the police, the judiciary, the special units, intelligence, etc., have all been fingered in this one crisis. And in many respects, probably for that reason, and by virtue of the fact that it centers primarily around a minister that most of us hadn't factored in. I think we'd all rather considered him a seemingly hardworking good guy in the panoply of cabinet ministers, ANC cabinet ministers. The consequences could be profound, because if the commission does its work and does it properly, whenever the results are ultimately heard, it could finger a huge number of, or finger, it could, there could be allegations out there against a huge number of people in the political sphere, cabinet, parliament, within the civil service, etc. So the issues could be absolutely profound. And when I say profound, it really is about, you know, it could go as high up as to Cyril, because I've heard too much on the grapevine, some more serious than others, and that, you know, he could be fingered. So if they if it becomes a whitewash, I think the anger would be absolutely profound. And bear in mind, end of next year we are going to local elections, and so far the ANC shows little sign of being at all able to come back from its poor governance and the fact that services that were once provided are no longer provided, cannot be provided, and there's rampant corruption around them. If, however, it comes out with something fundamental, it could be the ultimate constitutional crisis. And although perhaps, you know, in terms of the Chinese maxim, it might be the crisis one needs to turn the fortunes of the country around. But we really can't afford to wait for that to turn around. Now, the allegations essentially against the minister are that he interfered with sensitive police investigations. He colluded with businessmen, including someone accused of murder, and he disbanded the political killings task team in KZN. Now, political killings in KZN have become almost a growth industry. It's incredibly tragic, and the vast number, probably the most people who are killed, are involved in ANC, or are ANC representatives in politics, particularly local politics. So, you know, the implications of those allegations are profound, because they go to the very essence of undermining the state. There's also the allegation that a police task team in Gauteng uncovered a syndicate which is controlled by a drug cartel, which involves politicians, SAPs, policemen, metro police, correctional services, prosecutors, and the judiciary. It essentially appears to be tied in one way or another to every aspect of the what we'd call the security cluster, in as far as ministries goes. The impact, obviously, on the breach of the constitution, the denigration of the rule of law, and the and national security, are horrifying to even contemplate. And there's no doubt the South African public not only deserves answers, but deserves to be treated with respect in regard to something as profound as this. And the ANC may never come back from it. It just may destroy everyone.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This morning we're going to look at the appalling state of a crucial institution in any city in this country, and in Johannesburg in particular, which is the busiest and the largest and should be the best run office of them all. And that is, we're going to look into the state of the Johannesburg Master's Office. And to do this, I am very pleased to welcome Catherine Gascoigne, Treasurer and Head of the Master's Office Portfolio for the Johannesburg Attorneys Association. Catherine, welcome to Chai FM.
Morning. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine, before we go into the weeds, so to speak, can you tell us, what does the Master's Office do? What is its function in relation to the administration of justice and administration of legal processes that we all touch by in one way or the other?
So the Master's Office controls quite a lot of our day-to-day life, in that it deals with insolvencies, deceased estates, trusts, curatorships, minors. It has quite a wide range of functions, and you know, different aspects are controlled in terms of finances, but it substantially affects our economies, mm-hmm. because obviously insolvencies, deceased estates, trusts, there is a lot of money involved in that, which affects everybody's ability to shop, spend, save, and generally live.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I've had some dealings with the Master's Office recently, and actually I had very good service, but the conditions they were working in before this particular event, and I'll ask you about it, before came into came to our attention, it's almost like they're working against impossible odds. What is, just to have a look at, you mentioned about it, how it affects most parts of our lives, just to look at the question of the administration of deceased estates, what effect does that have on the heirs to an estate who suddenly are left without a regular income from as a result of the death of the family member?
Of the deceased. Mm. So there's quite a process involved in winding up an estate. It's very administrative and it has a lot of input from various entities, but the starting point is obviously the master's office, because somebody needs to be appointed as the representative of the deceased in order to administer that estate. Mm. So it substantially affects all the heirs, because everything comes to a complete standstill until that appointment is made. Mm-hmm. And you will see the last week and a half, the Johannesburg Master's Office was shut because of, through no fault of their own, but because of an electricity outage, which was a cable theft issue, and it was a cable fault issue. Mm-hmm. It took 6 days to finish, but during that time, not one single appointment was made, because it is impossible for the staff to be working in that office. Mm. Their systems go down, the lighting is down, it's not possible. So it puts a huge delay on those appointments, which means that the heirs going forward can't get finality. Mm. And it doesn't just affect the appointments, it affects the inspection of L&D accounts, mm-hmm. the permission to distribute the accounts. So there's a huge backlog of the amount of money that people are able to get back, and they can't touch it. Mm-hmm. You know, until it's finalized, it's not theirs to be able to live on.
Catherine, the reason I sought to speak to you was because the JAA had decided to do something quite dramatic, that shouldn't have to do, but dramatic, to try and help circumstances out. Do you want to tell our listeners what you've embarked upon to assist the office?
So the issue arises because the building in which the Master's Office is currently housed is not a state-owned building. It's a third-party-owned building. It's leased. And the landlord has not put in a generator or any kind of backup solution. There is no, it's not a lease that is ongoing. It's, mm-hmm. we're on a month-to-month lease. And that is not controlled by the Ministry of Justice. It's actually controlled by the Department of Public Works. Mm-hmm. So that is where our difficulty is, because as the practitioners and the stakeholders in the Master's Office, our immediate escalation process would take us to the Chief Master's Office and the Minister of Justice. Mm-hmm. But it's not where the problem lies. Mm-hmm. So what the JA did, we actually just said, this is unacceptable. We've got staff in these offices who are now no longer able to go in. Mm-hmm. We've got the Master's Office staff who are working in appalling situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is not acceptable to ask staff to work in the dark, in the cold. I mean, I'm a big coffee fan, so you can't even have a cup of coffee.
Yeah,
that's tragic. So, you know, it's the frustration into our lives as practitioners and into the heirs' lives. I mean, you can just imagine all the rural people coming into these offices to try and get assisted. They have no knowledge that the offices are shut. They're using their taxi money. Mm. They're sitting there and they get there and discover it's shut. And our form of complaint can't go higher than the Ministry of Justice. It has to go to the other ministries. And we're now saying to the other ministries, come on, you have to assist. So because we can't go there, they're not our ministries, we've said to the public, please assist us. Let us put out an initiative to in some way alleviate this problem so we can keep the lights on.
Mm.
We're taking funds into the JAA's banking account for the purposes, and we don't know yet because we don't know what the initiative will generate.
Mm.
But in order to possibly get rechargeable lights, battery backup so that we can keep laptops, printers, and lights going. So it has offended the master's office at the senior level because they see us getting involved in something we have no right to. But it is affecting the man on the ground. Mm. And as much as they think that our staff, our clients are all wealthy estates and big companies on insolvencies, it's not true.
Mm.
We all work for the man in the street who needs to be assisted.
Mm.
And that's who needs the help. And we're not getting it.
Mm. So it sounds like a problem that is probably an epidemic in the public sector. There are two elements. The one is a lack of really, really good management, solid management, management that doesn't take offence that somebody would, that the private sector would come in on the one hand, to try and help them do their jobs, because their own bosses are not listening to them. And the other is, you know, I've always wondered about this. Everything having to be outsourced from a ministry to the Ministry of Public Works. And, I mean, years ago we had constantly on radio and in the media we were talking about the service, you know, lifts getting stuck and not repaired in hospitals. It almost seems like there's the whole nature of how ministries work has to be rejigged to avoid this creation of silos where nothing actually happens. And the point is, since the ultimate function is one that really falls as a judicial function in the broader sense, one's heard nothing, certainly as a member of the public, one hears nothing about the fact that this actually is an office or an entity that falls under the judiciary. We've also had this extraordinary change of ministers for nefarious reasons.
Yes.
What is anything happening on that score? Any sense from yourselves that there's anyone who's interested in actually manage, you know, practically making sure that things are properly managed, or is it fall between two not well run ministries or more?
Well, you know, it's difficult to say. Our new minister came in late last year, and she came in, seemed to be making an impact.
Mm-hmm.
She has visited the master's office, and in fact, in one of her visits, she was subjected to a power outage in Johannesburg.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So she's very well aware of the situation, and insofar as it is not a problem that relates to her ministry, but to another ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of faith that we were going to get quite quick and quite significant changes.
Mm-hmm.
Our difficulty is we hear rumors that we're getting a new building. We hear rumors about a new lease and that things are going to improve, but there's no communication.
Mm.
And for us, the communication is key because it's not just us who need it. We then impart the communication to the general public, and we are the ones who get the ultimate backlash from the public when we can't assist them.
Yeah.
So our difficulty, I think, is not seeing that our ministry is fighting enough on our behalf with the other ministers. I mean, you can have a look at the moment at the Johannesburg Deeds Office. That does fall under a different ministry. It falls under the Department of Land and Rural Affairs. But they've had a very similar issue with regard to their building, which was also third-party owned, and the lease is also month-to-month, with the landlord refusing to upgrade and fix the leases. The JAA and that ministry have now forced the Public Works Ministry to get involved, and now that building is being relocated with a new building being constructed. So we're in exactly the same situation, but it has been an enormous struggle.
Mm.
And the amount of disinformation that's gone into the public through the news or through rumors has hampered, I think, everybody's ability to actually get to the truth, what's happening, and let's fix it. And I think big business are the guys who can put the pressure on to assist us in fixing it. You know, the public, your mum died, or you know, the next door neighbor's son died. All of them, it impacts them, and you need to fix it. Your insolvency means your staff who were employed don't get their final payments. It's really, that's where. I suppose I'm preaching to the converted, aren't I?
The idea is to get it out there and perhaps to help to persuade people who can really do something to do something. But perhaps, can I give you my own anecdote? Because it raised something I have been aware of in a variety of circumstances. I mean, we've all complained about the way we're treated by public servants at one stage or another. But I'd had to go to the master's office, deal with the master's office to get administratorship over a living estate because I've got my stepmother's incapacitated. Once I was in there, I was treated very well, and the circumstances, I just looked around. The offices are shabby. Blinds need fixing, light bulbs need to be put in, and their life is hampered by the fact that their lousy computers go down frequently, and probably tied to that is the fact that their telephones go down. If you can get through and someone is there to answer, you'll get through. But so in other words, the work can be done, and I was actually just genuinely grateful that once I was there and I went in as best as possible, I was served well. And I think the problem is that there's that huge disjuncture between the senior management over these institutions and the people who work under them. And I know from having been an employment lawyer way back in the past that if you show some respect and you show some willingness to do some minor things, you can change a working life. I mean, maybe it's as you say, it's as much as about providing a regular source of hot water and coffee and milk just to make people's lives less unhappy. Is there any way one can get to that management level that needs to understand that it actually has to look after its people, who are then looking after the people?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There are certainly staff in that Johannesburg Master's Office who are phenomenal. Mm. They will go out of their way to assist. They understand the problems and they understand the trickle-down effects of their actions. But they're also staff who are very unhappy and angry and who are overburdened with work. And the effect of that is never a good one when you landed with an angry public member shouting at you for something which you have no control of, or because of your workload you haven't got to. So it is a give and take, but I do agree with you that it would be very nice for the staff to be considered. You know, the JAA certainly has a good relationship with the Master's Office, but we are quite clear that we are able to bring to them the issues that we have that where their staff fail. So it's not just a relationship where we fight constantly for what we want. Mm. So now it's time for us to fight for what they want in order to get to what we want.
Absolutely. And just one other point is just the issue is, I know there was a stage at which allegations of corruption and sort of money passing under the table were fairly rife in the media. Is that true? Is that still the case? If it was true,
I haven't heard much. I think there's a lot of under the table things that do happen. Certainly, we don't hear a lot of it, but we certainly hear about it. And I think we'd be naive to think that it doesn't happen. You know, when you have people that want what they want, and people who have an ability to do it at a price where they are unhappy in the environment they work, it's going to happen. The Master's Office has, however, gone digital. So a lot of that corruption is being cut out because files are no longer going to be able to be lost. So previously it was, I'll pay you X and you find me my file and I'll get what I want. Now, you can't lose your file because it's been stored online and it should be accessible. The biggest problem at the moment is that the network goes down.
Exactly.
And that is... That isn't a master's office problem. That is either a CETA problem or the DHA link has gone down, which is we are totally tied into.
Yes, of course.
There's not much. I mean, those systems impact the master's office enormously. So even if the lights are on and the networks are down, we still can't get what we want.
Well, that probably speaks ultimately to a corruption on a grand scale, in the sense of the government paying for systems that probably have to be linked but are very poor. I mean, I'm just having an experience myself now with the CIPC. I just want to add a director to you know, nothing exotic. I mean, really, because my initial dealing with the CIPC was quick. Once I'd worked my way around the rather strange website, but it's exactly that sort of thing. I now can't do something this simple because I can't get beyond a certain way because Home Affairs is having a problem. So it's literally in that sense that it has to change.
Well, there's an an example of another ministry being tied into our ministry. So, Department of Home Affairs is extremely important with regard to the Master's Office, because if that link goes down, you can't take a death certificate and check it. You have to have that link up, and the Master then cannot register or accept a registration, online registration of an estate, because it can't check that is in fact a real death certificate and the deceased has in fact passed. So the minute those links go down, that's another situation where it comes down. Now at the moment, the Department of Home Affairs is embroiled with a big fight to get its own network, which will make quite a big impact to the Master's Office and its functioning. And we think the Master's Office should be joining that fight because it impacts so heavily on our ability to function. So, you know, there's another a ministry which is causing chaos for us.
Okay. Well, now I understand why I'm having another problem, but that is for another day. Catherine Gascoigne, thank you very much for joining us. I wish you and the JAA a lot of luck in helping to provide us with the service.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
And just to deal with what is local and what is always politics and etc., we've talked about the improvement on the roads, but what has the city of Johannesburg got up its sleeve to make us annoyed now? Well, it plans to get rid of parts of the grounds of two of its oldest sports clubs, Marks Park and the Pirates Club, as well as other heritage sites. And these developments are contained in documents set to be tabled at council in August. Now, according to these documents, the Johannesburg Property Company, which is in itself a sort of legalistic den of iniquity, plans to lease or sell the land to developers for high-density housing and commercial development. The documents apparently refer to the Field and Study Recreational Centre, the Melrose Bowling Club, Killarney Country Club, Zoo Lake and Pirates. And if approved, development on the land will, shall we say, significantly, as they say, affect the cityscape. It will obviously also add to the demand for services such as water and infrastructure in areas, as old areas. And living in one of these old areas, I can tell you the infrastructure is cuck. It's unclear how the process started or who started it and who the potential developers are, but as soon as the city council is involved, I'm going to assume the worst. Now, all of this potential sale until this week had really not been made, or last week had not been made to the public, whereas motions to have public participation were set to be tabled on the 25th of June, but because the speaker was voted out of council that day, the motions could not be heard. Now, so you're not in dealing with inconsistencies in way in the tabling of the motions. There still has to be a decision taken as to whether it merits being heard in council, and whether they are likely to be heard in August. There is discrepancies involving earth size, pricing, whether the property is going to be leased or sold, purchased or transferred, and potentially for housing. When they talk about the botanical gardens, they're obviously talking about Imarincha Dam. So you get a sense of the incursion into green spaces in Johannesburg. And this has, you know, you get the feeling that it's a sort of, well, these are a formerly white suburb areas, and there's township dwellers may be disadvantaged by not having them. Absolutely. But what this should have led to was the creation of green spaces. In the absence of green spaces in townships and in burgeoning new areas, the one thing that these spaces have done is they have provided a source of pleasure and relaxation and recreation and just sort of communing with a bit of beauty and greenness for the citizens of Joburg, wherever they may come from. And it's not just that people can come to the parks from afar, or they can come just by walking down the road. If you go to any of these parks, any of these spaces, you will see people of all races, of all ages, playing, relaxing, walking, running, cycling. It is what makes a city livable. It is key. And the fact that they would want to use it for development, this coming from a city council who has run the city extraordinarily badly, as we have discussed today, as we have discussed previously, is beyond outrageous. We are entitled not to have any faith that anything other than the denuding us of green spaces is what is going to occur. I mean, you recall a few weeks ago we spoke to Fran Haslam of the Zuleika Users Committee, and the work they've done there, and the relationship, the quality of the relationship they have with the people in the city council who are responsible for the area. Everyone has benefited from the preparedness of Fran and her council, and her committee rather, to really take an interest, because they live around the space, but the space is used by everyone and for everyone. And given the fact that, you know, you basically can't replace these spaces, it's a case of keeping them alive, literally and figuratively. And it's actually beyond words. They've apparently made it clear that it's not even a question of leasing property for use. The property would actually be sold. The one park is possibly wasn't even an asset for the city. The city's just used it for functions and sporting events. So a great deal of skepticism is warranted. There is a petition going around, and towards the end of the program, I'll see if I can find the details for it and give it out to you. So you can participate and make your voices heard. And everyone should make their voices heard. Again, much like with Zuleika, whether you live near it, use it, or you don't use it. Cities need their green spaces. They are emotional and recreational lungs for the city council. So there you have it. We will try and look for that for you.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I have found the petition. Unfortunately, I can't find a decent link to it. But if you drop me a line at info info@freespeech.org.za. info@freespeech.org.za. I will forward the. I will happily forward the petition to you. I've said that, you know, that everything is politics. Well, how about this for politics? Netflix, in a moment of spectacular woke idiocy, plans to screen the original Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth. Now, those of us of a certain age will remember not only that particular a version of the Jane Austen novel, but we'll particularly remember the iconic scene where Mr. Darcy lands up in a fountain and he comes out of the fountain sodden with his shirt clinging to his body. And it was iconic in every sense of the word. And, you know, what can one say? It was a moment of beauty. It was unforgettable. So what has Netflix decided to do? It's decided to axe the iconic scene to... And I kid you not, and this is where adhering to political correctness just is nothing but stupid. They are going to axe it, and they're axing a remake, rather, to avoid objectifying men. Oh, good God. In an era when the transgender movement and the narrowing of the space of free speech, as well as the, and we've seen the dreadful consequences of it, of progressive leftism demanding that the only form of colonialism that warrants measuring and condemning is the colonialism that once existed in the countries they come from, which is Western colonialism, and that somehow academia has managed to create this sense of we will decide who the victims are. There are victims and there are oppressors, and the oppressors are white men, and we also know that Israelis are all white people, so they're oppressors. This is the sort of crass stupidity that comes out of it, where everything becomes seen as hurtful, harmful, disturbing, or pornographic. And if you can't show a measure of discernment or even, you know, just having a bit of fun, it shows that your political systems, your philosophies, the things that people adhere to and are paying attention to, when there is so much unadulterated rubbish on our screens, I just do not know. But to end with a little bit of good news, we talk a lot about people who are leaving the country and the effect it has on our psyche and things in general, just, you know, how we run and how the economy, you know, loses by having productive members of society emigrate. There have been a few reports in the media about people who've left, have gone to sometimes exciting career opportunities overseas, and have realized that with all that we have to put up with here, they not only miss the country, but they actually, with the experience they have, they realize that with all the things we've been talking about, there is a way of doing what they are doing and better and more wide-ranging by coming back and doing it here. So it's a little bit of good news that people are out there and thinking about this, and that life isn't always greener on the other side, or grass, or whatever, or grass green spaces. That there may be more green spaces at the rate we're going, but I remain optimistic, and the sun is shining, and all I can say is please join me again next week when Sorrow Gone Rogue will be looking at the issues of politics that affect us in every way, and every aspect of politics affects us in every way. If you want me to send you the petition for the green spaces, info@freespeech.org.za. Until next week, have a lovely green-filled space.